Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. It is January the 6th, 2011, and this is the World Today broadcast. My name is Frank Weltner. I'd like to welcome you to the broadcast, and I'd like to begin it by talking somewhat philosophically about what America seems to be all about, and how things have changed so much in the last 50 to 100 years that those who originally came here would not even recognize this country. Most of them came here because they couldn't find work in another country, and they heard that it would be easier here in America, but once they got here, they found out it was, if anything, much harder to work here and to earn a living, because there were so many people pouring into the cities that the price of rents were driven sky high, and so many people applying for work that the salaries were driven very, very low. It was almost as if Americans were the way the Chinese are today, working as slaves and paying top dollar for everything that they purchase within their country. It hadn't always been that way hundreds of years before when people first came here. There was nothing but wilderness and a few Indians. These Indians, these indigenous natives, were not extremely fertile. They had just been wiped out by European diseases 50 to 100 years before the Europeans came to this part of the continent. There had been 35 million Indians in North America, South America, and in the Caribbean. But as soon as Europeans came here, within 30 years, their numbers went down to 500,000 on both continents and the Caribbean. It was virtually empty, so people could literally walk anywhere they wanted and not see an indigenous native anywhere. And if they did see them, if they shook hands with them or kissed an Indian girl, she would take the diseases of the European back to her village and they would all be dead in no time whatsoever. And hundreds of them would run from the village, those who were the last survivors, and take the diseases to the next village, and then the next, and the next, and the next, until an entire state and a region would be totally devoid of people. It was easy to take the continent. You didn't even need a gun. I was taught by John G. Neihardt, the poet laureate of Nebraska, when I was at the University of Missouri in Columbia. Mr. Neihardt had written an epic poem called The Cycle of the West in 6 books, all done in poetry, which he taught at the University of Missouri, and he also taught creative writing and critical essay, which I took from Mr. Neihardt. He was the most intelligent man I'll ever meet, and he told tales of living out in Nebraska, where he was the poet laureate. And if you go there today, they have a unicameral legislature. They only have a house. They don't have a senate. And there's a small dome, and under the dome is a bust of John G. Neihardt, poet laureate. He's considered one of their favorite sons. He considered Robert Frost to be the second best poet in America, and Robert Frost considered Neihardt to be the second best poet in America. Each of them considered themselves to be the best, which I suppose was a good, healthy response to friendly competition among scholars, and especially among poets. Who is an English major, I can tell you right now that poets are a long, long line of gentlemen, each with their hands in each other's pockets. stealing ideas, thoughts, rhymes, etc. from each other. And that's the way it should be, and that's the way all of civilization has always been. At any rate, when people first came here, they simply wanted to get away from the stress of Europe. There were no cities here at first, so they went right into the wilderness. They learned how to farm, which was very difficult at first. They lived very poorly, but they'd rather live that way and be independent than do anything else. And so this feeling of independence, it was instilled generation by generation into the pioneers that came here. And many of them were quite religious. They had nothing else to do but to pray and go to church on Sundays. And there wasn't much of an industry all over Europe. The biggest industry, one of them, was the church itself. So these are the things that people attended to. The church was their TV set, their radio. It was their record player. It was their iPod. It was their iPad. It was everything. It was their computer. When they went to church, there was a sheet of paper that would go from church to church every Sunday. And from that sheet of paper, the priest or minister would read what was going on in the country and in the world. These things were written down and they would be passed along. And then when the printing press hit, eventually people were able to get these things in papers, but only after they learned to read, which they didn't really know how to when they first came here. That was something that came later. You may ask, well, why are you saying these things? Well, because you have to understand the history that you grew from in order to know where you're going and why, and whether or not it's worth getting there. We're in a situation here where people are bemoaning the fact that they can't afford $4 and $5 a gallon for their gasoline to drive their automobile around. And I don't care if you have a small automobile or a big one, it's still expensive to fill it up and to drive it. And we have moved away from the center of our cities where we could generally walk to the stores, walk to the church, walk to the school, walk to work. And now we live far, far out, so we have to use these automobiles. But the whole magnet of industry is changing. People aren't even going to a store as much as they used to. A lot of people want to shop on the internet. The internet is a series of stores that are electronically projected onto a screen. You look at the product that you lust after in your heart and must have, and then you order it using a credit card or PayPal or some other electronic transfer. Something that 50 years ago no one even thought of. The nice thing about it is anybody today can start a store. You could start a store on the internet and probably bring in some bucks. You probably won't, because most people don't have the gumption to do anything to help themselves. I should know. I've certainly been one of those who I have a website where I could probably link to people and sell things, but I haven't done it yet. But maybe I should. But you ask yourself, well, why haven't you? And the reason is that I am an intelligent person. At least I like to think of myself as such. And I don't mean to put you down by saying that I am. And it's not as opposed to you. I don't judge you. I don't judge anyone. But I thought long ago about the ancient Greeks and how Paris was asked, what would you like to be? Would you like to have the most beautiful woman in the world? Or would you like to be the most intelligent man in the world? Or would you like to be the greatest warrior? I believe those were the three questions. And he decided he wanted the most beautiful woman in the world. So he became kind of a byword for a kind of little pretty boy, kind of a trophy husband with a trophy wife, who was a little too cowardly to fight well in a war. So he had his brother fight for him, and his brother eventually, Hector, was killed by Achilles. At which point, all hell broke loose. Troy fell, and Paris and his bride, his bride wasn't killed, but Paris was killed. And he was killed in front of his parents, which is considered a real horror in ancient stories. To be killed in front of a parent was the worst thing anyone could dream of, because having children and passing yourself and your family and your clan on to the future was considered among the ancients to be very, very important. We here in America don't care about that sort of thing. If we have children, many of us don't, but if we have children, we send them to schools outside of the home where complete strangers indoctrinate them in various forms of socialism, communism, capitalism, militarism, fascism, salute to the flag, respect for bona fide corrupt politicians and presidents, respect for a system that has no respect for the people of the country anymore. And this is what we've grown into now. It's a kind of upended empire, an imperial majesty of senators and congressmen with blood dripping from their hands, voting for constant warfare, constant militarism, constant development of more evil weapons, one after the other after the other. They also support vile organizations like the CIA and the FBI and other disinformation agencies whose job it is to lie about the United States and to lie about other countries and their leaders so that they can make unwise changes in the world that may not work and may cause another war to happen. In fact, in some cases, these lies are given to other countries to start a war so that the United States would be able to move in, put a base there, help the ruler who's at war, and then grab all of their oil and all of their minerals and their raw materials, or at the very least have that geographic position in the world from which to fly airplanes, and then threaten other nations. Because America's lost its way. America has become what the people ran away from when they came here. They came here to avoid military service in England and France and Germany and Russia and elsewhere. They came here to avoid high taxes for wars of empire, whereby England controlled 1/20th or 1/10th of the world and had bases in China and India and in South Africa and you name it. Everywhere you went, there was a British base. Enough so that there were hardly enough Brits to even control it, so they had to bring in immigrants into Britain to run the sweatshops so they could continue in this frivolous empire building. Which is what's happened here in America now. We decided that we wanted to have an empire, and now we're inviting one nomadic people after another, many of them with no education whatsoever and very small brain areas in their skulls, to be quite honest. People who may or may not be able to even function as Americans. And we've already had groups of people who didn't function too well as Americans, and now we've got even more of them. And one of the reasons is that the largest groups of blacks and whites have decided to go to college, and they function fairly well in college, at least as well as some of the idiots that came from rich families fared at Harvard and Yale years ago. And now at the state universities, we put out plenty of people who are educated enough to be able to read and write and to follow orders and to, probably the best thing they can do is tolerate boredom. Because when you go to a college and you spend 4 to 8 years there getting one or two degrees, what you've done is learned how to tolerate absolute boredom at the hands of professors who are either too old to be interesting or were never interesting in their lives. People who never wanted to work but just wanted to get through and muddle through, so they got degrees and they stood up behind a podium and talked for an hour at a time. And sometimes they just read from a textbook. They'd order one textbook to read from and another textbook that you would read from. And as they read from the second textbook that you didn't see, you thought that they made those words up themselves. But as a matter of fact, they were plagiarizing another professor's textbook. And since you never saw that book, you thought he was just the smartest person in the world. No, he was using someone else's work, which is all right. I mean, he paid for the book. He paid for it. Or he got it for free through the mail in the hope that maybe he would assign it to you to read, but he assigned another one for you to read. And so he read this one to you as though it was, well, it was his own words. Or it were his own words, I suppose, would be the correct grammatical way to put it, since it's plural. But we don't really need to go there. But at any rate, we have millions and millions of young Americans who have gone through college. Some of them are smart and some of them are dumb. But as long as they were smart enough to persist and to get their degree even with a D, they would have a chance then perhaps to get a better job. But that's really not the case. Most of them never got a better job. When I got out of college, I was trained to be a teacher. But about the time I got out, let's see, I started college in 59. I finally got my, sort of my other obligations. I got my degree about 64, and then I got another one in 68 or 69. Got my master's in English. By then, the pill, which had started being used in the 1950s when I was in high school, had run its course, and there were fewer babies, so there weren't too many freshman English classes anymore, because all the girls were taking the pills and having sex without having to have babies, and they were enjoying that for the first time. And so I was enjoying looking at my university, firing one teacher after another who used to teach freshman English, but didn't do that anymore because there were no kids coming up because of the pill. You see, nothing happens in a vacuum. Something that looks perfectly all right can be a total disaster, and the pill was one of them. Now we have women who, well, they think that their lives are not to be spent being pregnant and having children. You don't find any June Cleavers anymore, staying at home and keeping a house clean for a bunch of snotty little boys some subdivision in Los Angeles. No, women don't do that anymore. They might have one child, they might have none. They may not even get married. They take the pill, they have sex, but they don't have to have children, so many of them don't. And so our fertility rate's going down. We have about 1.3 babies per couple, but we need 2.3 in order to rejuvenate ourselves and keep our level the same, but that's not happening. And so we have these Judeo-Bolshevik banks. They're owned by the Rothschilds and those that founded and ran the evil Soviet Union, and now they are running the evil United States now that they've come back here to roost where they came from, having gone over to Russia to kill and torture people. They're now back here speaking Russian, as I've always said, at Brighton Beach. Just go to Brighton Beach, go to the restaurants, listen to the Russian being spoken by these ex-communists, and the laughter that they have over how they had their way there, and some disgust that they got kicked out and that they had to come back to America, but pride that they're able to force America into the same kind of Judeo-Bolshevik institutions as they had forced the Russians into. And as I've told you, things are not going to go too well for you. FEMA has camps for you. The soldiers have guns for you. And speaking of the soldiers having guns, many of these soldiers are not even Americans of the type that look like you. They look totally different. They might be Mongolian, they might be Chinese, they might be Nigerian, they might be Egyptian, they might be Iranians. There are all these people that are immigrating here under this crazy immigration law that says that Europeans can't really immigrate here, especially if they're Christians, that Jewish people, if they're Europeans, get first dibbies. Iranians who are Christians, well, they could come, but they'd rather have them as Muslims. Anything that's not white and Christian comes first. So if they're not white, that's good. If they're not Christian, that's good. And then they go downhill from there. You could be a totem worshiper and get in before a white Christian from Germany or France. In fact, I've heard of South Africans who are want to become African Americans, but they just happen to be white Africans. And they want to come here because since South Africa is no longer apartheid, some of the black sheriffs and And police are beating the heads of the whites the way the whites used to beat the heads of the blacks, and they don't like it. Some of them are being murdered by the law enforcement agencies over there, and they want to come here. And they ask if they can have asylum here, and our government always says, no, you can't. But if you're black, you could come right in. Because America's become a racist country. A racist country of the worst type. I mean, it's not good really to be racist, but there is a certain health to it if you just want to protect your country from being overrun by people that don't look like the people that live there. And you find this all over the animal world. You find group of monkeys and apes after another one living in groups in sort of like ghettos and beating on the other ones who are trying to get in to share the bananas with you. They just don't allow it. And that's why countries reform, so that people who came from certain clans would have their own country. And that's why the Germans and the Vandals and the Huns fought to keep the Romans from getting into their lands and taking them and building farms, because the Germans wanted to be able to hunt and fish. They wanted to be able to farm their own lands. They didn't want some other race coming in and taking over and some other nationality. And that's why the Brits fought when the Romans crossed the North Sea and went into Britain. They fought them all the way to the wall where the Romans finally just built the wall and said, the hell with it, we can't take the whole island. And then after several hundred years, when Rome's people, his population, had begun to decline because it was so decadent, and like the United States, everyone sat on their duffs watching the games. In this case, it was gladiatorial contests. And instead of having sex with their wives, they were having sex with all of these immigrants and producing children that were kind of a mongrelization of what Rome used to look like. And a lot of these people didn't really want to fight. A lot of them weren't good stock. They died in childbirth because they didn't eat right. They didn't have a job. They didn't have a clean place to live. And so Rome began to decline. People were into bestiality, sex, into games where people would be killed with someone stabbing them with a knife for entertainment, etc. Well, the early Romans certainly wouldn't recognize what Rome had become. And when it came to the last whimper, the Vandals just walked right into the city. The Romans opened their gates for them and said, oh, the hell with it. Come on in. Come on in and kill us. They even held swords up so they could slit their throats for them. And Americans will probably do the same thing when push comes to shove. But I can tell you right now what will happen when America falls. It'll fall from nuclear war. You know what they say, those who live by the sword die by the sword. Those who bomb people with nuclear weapons are bombed by people with nuclear weapons. Those who terrify people with their nuclear weapons find that the people they terrify eventually tell them to get screwed. And they go into a corner and they make their own nuclear weapons and toss them back at the people who originally frightened them. And that's what's going to happen to you. It's what's going to happen to me. It's going to happen to my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. It's going to happen to the huge animals that are still out on the Great Plains, such as the bison. The bison and the elk and the moose. All of the white-tailed deer. They will succumb to the atomic weapons as well, because the radiation will be killing them for hundreds of thousands of years. Animals in this country will die of cancers. And eventually the caldera will blow up, killing everybody all the way to the coast, and then from there all the way to England and Russia. This is our future. And so it seems to me, and it's always seemed to me as an intellectual, that working for a living and spending my time trying to become wealthy in America, which is what all of these TV shows tell me all the time is what I should be doing, just seems kind of stupid to me. It just seems so useless. I mean, if birds can eat and enjoy themselves without working, and, you know, if God cares enough about them and about rabbits and about field mice and so forth, that they can live, and bugs, that they can live and persist and even thrive, Why should human beings have to work so hard? And it comes to me that the reason birds are able to thrive and the other animals, as long as people aren't shooting them to death unfairly with their guns, it's probably because they don't buy a house using a banknote from a Judeo-Bolshevik with a Rothschild bank in New York that wants to make sure they work for 30 years to buy that house and pay tons of money for the house, way, way, way beyond what it would ever be worth, because they make it convenient to do so. Whereas a bird just finds some twigs, puts a nest together, puts the eggs in there, out come the kids. They raise the kids, out they go, and they fly down to South America for the winter and back up here for the summer to avoid the winter down in South America. They seem to be smarter than we are. Because what we're doing is, it's so ignorant that I almost hesitate to even bring it up. I'm kind of an independent guy. I used to spend my summers mountain climbing. I'd go out there either with a buddy of mine or with a girlfriend, and we would climb mountains all summer long, and then I'd teach school in the winter. But as soon as school was out, I'd either go out to the mountains, or I'd fly to Europe and get a cheap bike, and I would just bike all over Europe. And in fact, I lived on military bases a lot, too, because of my employment, which we've got into in the past, so we don't even have to go there. But, yeah, I know the military life very, very well, and I know the hundreds of bases that we have all over Europe and elsewhere. I know the bases we have in northern Turkey, in Ankara, in Istanbul, the headquarters of Turkish American Logistics there. I've seen all of this. I've been to Israel. You name it, I've probably been there and done that. I remember when I was in Turkey, there was a brothel there, and everybody said, "Yo, you got to go see the brothel." Well, after a couple of months, I finally thought, well, I'll go see the brothel. So I got into a cab, and I said, take me to the brothel. And he takes me there, and he points up this alley, and I walk up the alley, and there's two soldiers with rifles. They were Turkish soldiers that were manning the thing, and it struck me that it was really a prison. And what it was if you were Turk and you stole something or killed somebody, they would put you into a jail, and your parents would have to bring you your food because they weren't going to feed you. And yeah, that's right. They wouldn't feed you. You had to have your daughter or your son or your mother or your aunt or somebody bring you food. But if they didn't bring you food, or if you didn't want to be in the prison, you could sign your own mother, over to be a whore. And they'd go to this brothel. And I mean, they had some of the ugliest women there I've ever seen. And no one ever touched them, except when the United States Navy came to town. You would have thought that these were 18-year-old high school sweethearts, because they were just jumping in bed with them like mad. I remember the first time the Russians came to Turkey. They weren't like the American sailors at all. When the sailors came, there was always trouble. They were kissing girls in the street and raping them, and then there were riots going on because the Turks didn't like it when the Sixth Fleet came in. But when the Russians came in, and they were supposed to be, according to all the CIA propaganda, they were the most awful people in the world. They were degenerates. They didn't believe in this. They didn't believe in that. They'd given up Christianity, etc. Well, on Sunday, they all went to church, so that was a lie. And they spent their time well-dressed, walking around, being friendly to everyone, and taking pictures, and going to the art museums. That was the Russian Hun that we were told were so sadistic and irrational. No, they were very, very courteous and much better than we Americans were. And they didn't go to the brothel. They weren't into that sort of thing. They were not a bunch of cowboys like the Americans. And I think when the Russians look at Americans, they consider us to be cowboys, that we're always looking for trouble. And it's the truth. Right now we're fighting a war in Afghanistan. Not that the Russians haven't done that. They did that 20 years ago. And they should have taught us that we couldn't win in Afghanistan because the Russians couldn't win. And even Alexander the Great couldn't win. He just simply made a treaty where he could walk through with his armies and get the hell out of there because he didn't want to fight the Afghanis because he couldn't beat them. Nobody can beat them. Have we beat them? We've been there, what, 10 or 20 years now? They've kicked our butts. They have absolutely kicked our butts and showed us what a bunch of wussies we are. The only thing that we can do is shoot at them from high-tech airplanes that have no pilots. They have excellent pilots who are sitting in Indiana and telling these drones to drop bombs on wedding parties, which people in America were told were actually soldiers for Al-Qaeda. And usually they aren't. And then after they drop the bombs, our Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, says, "Oh, we're very sorry that we killed 80 people in a wedding party and destroyed their homes and killed the mothers and children and fathers. We're just so terribly sorry. Please forgive us for doing that." Why don't you just say, "Hey, we're Americans and we just can't help it. We go everywhere and kill and rape people." Why don't you tell the damn truth, Hillary? Come on. That's what we did in Japan. We went in there and we killed and raped people. We did it in Germany. We did it in France. We have an army of rapists. Come on, you know what our people are like. Can't you at least be honest? I mean, really, let's get a grip on ourselves and at least have a healthy honesty about our decadence, huh? Let's not be completely stupid here. At least we should know what we are. And in many ways, we are the lowest of the low. So there we have it, a little American rape, a little American soldiering, a little American military, a little American greed, a little American capitalism, a little American deception among other countries so that we can try to get them to do what we want them to do. Because we like to think that they're stupid, but as a matter of fact, they pretty much wised up to us by now. They know what we're up to. They absolutely know what we're up to. You know, you'd be amazed at how wise these folks have become over the years. But we think we can lie to everybody. We think we can lie. But what I was talking about was this mass psychosis we have that we have to be as wealthy as possible. That America was formed by people who were filled with anti-Christian greed. You know, the first Christians were communists. Do you know that? The first Christians were communists. They believed in not owning anything. In fact, rich people were told that if you want to become a Christian, you have to sell everything that you own. We want you to sell everything that you own, and only then can you come and try to be a Christian. And most of them said, "Screw you, we're not going to do that. You're asking me to do too much. I've got 20 plantations, 5,000 slaves, 5,000 hogs. I'm not going to give you everything and become a part of you. That's just not going to happen. Just not going to happen." So many of them just walked away. And you can't really blame them. If Americans did the same thing today and said, you know, you have to give up all of your goods to become an American, I don't think there'd be anybody living here. I think most people say, you know, Go stick it. I'm gonna leave. Because I'm an American, and I want to own everything. I want to have 5 cars. I want to have a house with 5 bedrooms, even though there's only 1 kid. I want to spend money heating that house all winter long. So that's going to cost me $3,000 or $4,000 to heat it. But I don't really care because I'm making $100,000, $200,000. So screw off. I want everything. It's all me. I'm an American. I'm it. I want everything. I want to go to plays. I want to eat out. I don't want to have to cook. And on and on and on. I want to be decadent. I want to be a shirker. I don't want to be like a person who farms their own land, plants their seeds, weeds their farm, prays for rain, goes to church on Sunday, is dirty most of the time, but they have 5 or 6 or 8 kids who help them in their farm. I don't want to be like that anymore. I want to be a slob that sits around and watches TV, that drives back and forth, that never really exercises much. Unless I'm just doing it to make my muscles look good so I can get some more sex from a better looking chick. That's what I want. And I know what you want. You want to be decadent. You want to be a decadent city dweller. You want to give up your entire past. Well, let me tell you something. I didn't live my life that way. You know, so if you want, you can turn away from me right now because I didn't live like an American. I grew up on farms. I grew up in sports. I grew up on farms. I mountain climbed. I lifted weights. I tried to help people that needed help. I had relatives that had farms that needed to have all their fence posts taken out and put back in with new ones, and trees cut down for fence posts, and ground down to just the right size and put in again so that the cattle couldn't get out, and someone that could put the barbed wire back on the fence. Because we were not families of pretty fences. We were the typical rough, tough barbed wire American. Everything, do it cheap as you can. Because, hey, you had to do it yourself and you had to pay for it. And barbed wire was as cheap as anything. It was really cheap. So, I was doing stuff like that. But I was eating better than I've ever eaten in my life because these women on these farms, these relatives of mine, they could cook the best food you've ever had. And you've never eaten food like that. You've gone to the best hotels, you've gone to the best restaurants, and you've eaten stuff that was like crap by comparison to what I ate every day of my life. Because, you know, you convinced yourself that if people did it for you, and your mom didn't do it, it was good. Well, your mom never had time to cook because she had to work. She had to go and hug the Judeo-Bolsheviks filing cabinets at the office, work herself to death, drive herself to death getting to the office and back. Then she had to cook some food, so she threw some TV dinners on the table for you. And maybe on Christmas and Thanksgiving she actually cooked something, which was kind of a false demonstration of how much she loved the family. But if she loved the family, she wouldn't have been out working all day long. She would have been home, cleaning the house, making sure she cooked things that had lots of nice spices in them that were absolutely delicious. And she would have made sure her family did with a little bit less, so they got a lot more love out of their parents. But you wouldn't know anything about that unless you grew up in a semi-farm type situation. Or if your parents didn't really go to college and they were too stupid and too average to get a really good paying job. So therefore they had a low paying job and they could hardly get a job that would keep them working all the time. In which case they would be at home with you. And maybe you did have a father and a mother. But if you had one of these rich dudes for a father and a mother, then you probably never saw them. You know, you probably lived a quiet life of desperation in your room, and later when they got your car, in your car, anything to keep you out of the house and out of the way of them. And that's the way you lived your life. But I lived my life richly in a house that was fairly poor all the time. And my family had a little bit more than most families, which I think they did. But, you know, you can't really tell because families always say they make more than the next family. I think we lie to each other a lot. And I tell you the truth, I think most of us are poor. We're either house poor, in which case we have a huge house in a neighborhood that's expensive and we have no furniture inside the house. Or we have a little dinky house that's maybe 600 or 700 square feet. We get two or three children and a mother and a father in there. And we have enough furniture so that, I mean, the rooms are small so you can't have much furniture. I think most of us are poor. I think that this idea that Americans are rich is ridiculous. I mean, we have cars, but what do we do with them? We drive to work and back. And then we're so worn out that we have to just sit and watch TV and eat a TV dinner. And we've gotten to the point in the present depression that we're in that we can't even go out to eat. I quit going out to eat. Well, I never did go out to eat very much. You know, in fact, my family, believe it or not, we used to eat roadkill. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? Why, we ate roadkill. Well, we did eat roadkill. We had farms. We knew the game wardens, and they knew who we were, and they went to church with us, and they knew that we had a lot of kids. And although we raised hogs and stuff like that and butchered them out, that we always needed more meat. And if somebody ran over a deer, the ranger would call us up on the telephone, on the party line, and he would tell us, you know, I want you to meet me here. And so we'd go out there and meet him, and there would be a deer. We'd throw it in the pickup truck, take it home. Sometimes the warden would even help us to put it up in the barn and drain its blood out so that it would have good meat without the blood coagulating, which was really... would make it taste kind of gamey. And then we'd take it in and have it frozen and butchered up by the butcher, but we'd always watch the butcher do it because, it's just too much for a butcher to take venison and give you every pound back that he owed you. You had to stand there and watch him, or he'd keep about 20 or 30 pounds of it back. So that's what we did, and that's what everybody did. And the butcher expected you to watch him because he knew he was dishonest. And that's just the way it was. And we also took in a freshly butchered pig so that you could mix for certain cuts, ground pork with ground venison, especially if it's an older deer. And then you'd always get a nice tender meat out of it. But that cost us nothing. You couldn't buy the delicious cuts of meat that we ate and the delicious vegetables that we raised. And there's nothing like eating a chicken that you go out and you wring its neck, you throw it into hot water, pull the feathers off, gut it out, cut it up, immediately fry it and serve it within the same hour or two. There's nothing that tastes as good as something that fresh. And you're never going to taste something like that. Because you're never going to live in a utopia like that ever again. And it was a tough life. We had to carry water up the hill from the creek or from the well where we could find water. We'd have to carry these buckets of heavy water up those things. But that's just what we did. We didn't think much about it. I mean, that was the way everybody did it. I mean, those were certainly different days than you have now. But, you know, you guys you're working too much, and you're too worried about the depression. I live on very, very little money. I always have. I often felt that life is a balance between working and destroying your life by doing the work of somebody who doesn't even care about you. Some boss that he just bosses you around constantly, makes you miserable. That is, I always thought that is not the way I'm going to live my life. I'm going to live my life so I can read books. And I was always a librarian and a teacher. I read books, I'm going to study. And when the internet came up, I started my internet sites, which are archives of information, so that I could give to the world that which I know, and that which I know that the world never knew before, because there was no one like me to really bunch it all together into a library, and I knew how to do it. And so I did. That's exactly what I did. And I eventually made TV for YouTube and got kicked off of there. I'd like to get back on there. I don't know if I can or not, but I think I will try to. I may have to get a lawyer to do it. I think what happened was some Jewish organization just badmouthed me enough where they said, oh, the hell with it, and they kicked me off. Not because of me, but just to get these Jewish mouths to stop ringing in their ears, because the Jews didn't want me talking truth about Israel and about how much they killed people there and how they acted like a bunch of government grunts in abusing the people and building huge walls where people never even saw the sunshine anymore in small towns on the West Bank. I talked about all the great evils they were doing in Israel. They didn't like it. I talked about how they ran the Soviet Union and killed 65 million people and then made a big deal out of 6 million. But when you looked at the statistics before and after the war, there were 16 million Jews before the war and 16.5 million after, which didn't jive too much with the 6 million, and it always disturbed me that it didn't. There must be some miracle going on for the 6 million to have happened. And I don't want to say that it didn't happen, so I'm not going to say that. But I'm just going to point out that the facts on the population just didn't bear out what they were talking about. Now, I'm willing to admit that I might be wrong about that. The numbers aren't wrong. The publications aren't wrong. The publications say 16 million Jews in 1937. That's the World Almanac of 1937. And 16.5 million Jews in 1947. And that's from the State Department and the World Almanac. And the numbers in the almanac stay pretty consistent for 10 years before and after the war and on from there. That there was no big jump and no big drop in population. It all stayed exactly the same, which I find extremely interesting. But at any rate, I was able to get all these facts together that I discovered, like the fact that the Jews ran the Soviet Union like a killing field, and that they're very anti-Christ about it. They love to kill Christians because, hey, you're not talking about Jews when you're talking about Russia. The Jews are really 0.5% of Russia. But when these Christians lifted their heads, they had to shoot them off in order to keep their power. Because when you're only 0.5% and people start asking you questions, you just shoot them in the head until they quit asking. And there was murder everywhere in that Soviet Union. And I expect that when the Jews take over America, which I have no idea, they already have, actually. They run the banks. They run the media. They run the government. They talk to the FBI, the police departments, and they have the Congress gave them the right to tell these people what a hate crime was and what a hate group was. Of course, they never told them that they were a hate group, that they were the Judeo-Bolsheviks who killed 65 million Russians in the Soviet Union. You see, that's the problem. There's no fairness here about this thing. None whatsoever. But I guess that's just the way that it is, isn't it? And I'm just an evil European. An evil European Christian, that's what I am. I was raised going to Sunday school, working on farms, going to schools, high schools, colleges, etc., playing sports, mountain climbing, hunting animals, cleaning them and bringing food home to the table of my parents. I was an evil person. That's what I was. I was an evil white person. That's me, the evil white boy. And I can't hold a candle to the good Jewish person who killed 65 million people in Russia, and then who went to Brighton Beach to talk in Russian and laugh about how they killed all those 65 million people. and how they're going to do it to the same people who live here, because no one's doing anything to stop them. They destroyed the economy several times with their banks. Their money was fake, phony, paper money that never existed. They made it out of ink and paper from this Federal Reserve system. I have to laugh every time I think about the whole fraud of it. There's nothing more fraudulent than American currency. Unless, of course, it's British currency or French currency or German currency. They all do this fractional reserve banking. And in America, we've got it down to, if somebody borrows money, we'll just print the money and rent it to them for 5, 10, 20%. But the banks, owned by our little Jewish buddies, don't have to pay for the money. They get it for free. In fact, they even get paid to distribute it. And then they're allowed to counterfeit it inside their banks and loan out 10 times what they brought in. So they're actually able to make money. But if you want to counterfeit money, you're going to go to jail, buddy. Because you're not Jewish. You got to be a Jew to be able to do that. People say, oh, well, you shouldn't use the word Jew. Yes, I should use the word Jew, and everybody should start using the word Jew pretty darn soon, or it's going to be too late. Because it's the Jews that are doing this to us. They're the ones that just ripped us off to the tune of $4 trillion, and for a total of about $30 trillion. There was something in the news just the other day that these derivatives, which are fraudulent money products that were made up by the Jews, mostly in New York, that there's $150 trillion in derivative products out there around the world. Did you hear that amount? Trillions. Trillions and trillions and trillions. $150 trillion in these things. And some people say there's $500 trillion in these derivatives that were fake, phony products that were sold to people for their hard-earned paper dollars, whether they were in Russia or Ireland or where they were. And now these Judeo-Bolsheviks in England, London and New York have that money they got from those people. Then their little schemes fell apart that they were gambling with, and they needed more money, so they came to the United States Congress, and against our wishes as the people, they stole another $3 or $4 trillion from them. And they're still pulling money out of the honey pot up there at the Federal Reserve. They're making it up out of nothing. They're counterfeiting it 10 times, and then they're loaning it out to people for interest. And they're talking the government into doing one war after another so that they can loan the money for the war, because a bank doesn't make any money unless it gets loans going where they can make interest. Otherwise, the bank goes broke. So these bankers, they want America to be at war, and that's exactly why we're at war. Not at war for you. We're not at war for the Americans. We're at war for the Jewish bankers in New York, the Judeo-Bolsheviks, the communists of Russia, the communists who sent from southern New York, who sent those men, 350 of them, over to Russia to run the show over there and to kill people. Oh, I've mentioned that 100 times, I know, but it's something that you have to hear over and over again so that you don't forget it. And go to JewWatch.com and look it up. You can find the names of every one of them that went over there and the positions they held in the Soviet Union. And one of the first things they did was to murder the Tsar, because he was a Christian Tsar. They don't have any love for Christianity. They're anti-Christian. They're anti-Christ is what they are. Hell, they killed Christ in the Old Testament and said, not only are we going to kill him, but hey, let it hang on our heads forever. We're proud that we're killing him. Look in the Gospels. That's where you'll find it. And then Paul was helping to hang him and to put him in prison. And then finally, he, according to the story of the Bible, he became a Christian himself and started converting Christians who weren't Jewish, but who were from other religions, like the pagan religions, to Christianity. And the Jews tried to kill him. They tried to kill him, and so he appeal to the Romans, since he was a Roman. He had the right to trial. And he was still killed. And the Jews were behind it. They told the Romans, you can't let this man come into our towns and convert the people from Judaism and talk against Judaism, because Jesus talked against it. Because Jesus was anti-Semitic. You know, these Pharisees came to Jesus to complain that he was preaching on a Sabbath. And Jesus told them, you claim to be of your father Abraham, but your real father's the devil, who was a liar and will always be a liar. And he's basically saying, you're all a bunch of deceivers and liars. Which is exactly how they sold all those trillions of dollars worth of derivatives. By deceiving people and lying to them about how valuable they were, when in fact they were worth nothing. They were junk property. And they were selling them for money that was worth at least a lot more than that property was. And so they destroyed all the economies of the world. And looked at people and said, don't criticize us, we're Jewish. If you criticize us, we're going to call you anti-Semitic. Well, let me tell you something. If you're going to control the United States government, the French government, the German government, if you're going to control the English government with your money, with your banks, and with your threats, if you're going to play big shot like that with these democracies, then you can expect the people in those democracies to criticize you. That pretty much goes with the turf. If you're president, people are going to come down on you and criticize you like you've never been criticized before in your life. And that's our right. It is our right to criticize every player in government, every player in banking, every player everywhere. And we're going to criticize you. You are not going to get away with doing this to our economy, with taking over Harvard and Yale and Princeton and all these universities and packing them with Jewish people so that Christians can't even get a spot in there. Now, if you're going to be that racist, we're going to criticize you for it. We're going to point you out for the racist that you are. And we're going to try to do something about it. We're going to try to produce, we're going to try to help our people and to protect them. And if you're going to go after them, we're not going to let it get to the point where it got in Russia. I can assure you of that. There's not going to be any killing of Americans in Russia the way they were killing of Russians in the Soviet Union. That's not going to happen. You know, we've all got guns. Did you know that? Almost every American has guns, so you've got a problem here. You know, you try that here. You try pulling people out of their homes here. And you might do it for a couple of nights, but after that, the next time you bring 7 or 8 of you guys around with a van to pull people out and kill them, you're going to disappear yourself outside of the city. Because we're not going to put up with it. You are not going to kill us out the way you did the people of Petrograd. You're not going to kill us out the way you did the people of Kiev. You're not going to kill us out the way you did to the people of Byelorussia and the Ukraine. You're just not going to do it. We're not going to let you. So you can just forget about your New World Order and your bankathon that you have going, because it's not going to work. It isn't going to work. And I'm not the only one blowing the whistle on you. There's other people out there with radio shows all over the country. And oh, by the way, the internet was your worst nightmare. Because now even I can own a radio station right here that could be heard perfectly in CD quality all over the world, and for nothing. For nothing. So your dollars don't amount to anything on the internet. Oh, you may own all these big internet companies. You may own the portals. But it's very difficult for you to stop what's happened historically here. You couldn't stop the press when it was invented by Gutenberg. You couldn't stop radio. You couldn't stop TV. So what you did was you took them over. And we know that's what you're planning to do with the internet, but you can't do it because the internet goes in everybody's home, and all somebody has to do is rent a little time on a server, and they can publish anywhere they want in the world. Now, if you try to shut that down, you probably could say, well, you got to be licensed to do it. And if you're not licensed or if you break your license, we'll tell you you can't get on here, and then we'll charge you hundreds of bucks if you defy us. You might be able to do that. But if you did, guess what? All these little hacks who are 13 years old, they'd bring the whole internet down around your little banking neck. They'd ruin your banks. They'd fix it so that your banks lost all their money. They'd drain it out over the internet through fraud just to get back at you if you went after their internet, because they have the knowledge of doing that. I couldn't do it, but these 13-year-olds, they're pretty smart, man. They know the internet like the back of their hands. And they bring you down to nothing. They destroy every economy that you ever milked with your banks. And your banks would be finished. So I don't think you're going to be able to do to the internet what you did to AM and FM radio and what you did to television. You're not going to be able to control it. It's just not going to happen. I'd like to thank you folks for listening to me this week and this day. I'll be back again tomorrow. And remember, be careful out there. And read. Read GeoWatch. Read American USSR. And read some of these other internet newspapers that tell the truth. And don't print just this propaganda that you get from these minority Jewish-owned newspapers all over the country. You know, get your information from people who aren't from that tribe. And maybe you'll learn something about what's really going on in this world. And maybe you'll be able to save your clan, your family, your people, and your nation.